Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Damage Report. I'm John Adirola. It's Monday, and so you know what? Let's bring on Brooke.
You know, if you know what's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, exactly.
You know what I realized over the weekend?
What?
So you're here on Mondays.
Uh-huh.
And usually throughout the week, we'll take a clip or two each day for YouTube that we don't put out that day. We save it for the weekend.
Right.
But you're here on Monday, so it's like the least likely for that to happen. But I'm gonna start to try to do that because I want people on the weekend to see stuff with you in it. You're usually only people see on Monday.
Don't fix it.
No?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. So y'all, John has me watching this show on Netflix called Rhythm and Flow.
Uh-huh.
Is that it? Rhythm and Flow. Uh-huh. It's hilarious. And I laugh so
hard. Music competition show.
It is, but it's hosted by Chance the Rapper, T.I. and Cardi B. And I laugh. We're just talking about it, so now it's like on my mind. But I laugh so hard because part of it is they're funny. The other part is I'm imagining John watching it, and then I am double tickled.
Uh huh. Why is that?
It's just not what I expected, and you like it so much.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good show. I'm glad that you told me to watch it. It's a funny show.
I started watching it because my fiance was watching it.
Yeah.
And I thought I wasn't gonna start watching it because I don't actually listen to any of their music.
Uh-huh. You should. Cardi's good. T.I.'s great.
Well, I started to since I've been
okay, good.
Watching it. But anyway, very interesting.
It's funny.
It's not. Look, if you're gonna watch a Netflix competition show, obviously it should be Great British Bake Off. But if you've already gotten through that, then sure, Rhythm and Flow.
Why not? I feel like I'm team Rhythm and Flow.
Okay.
I don't know, I couldn't get into the Great British Bake Off.
They're slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. A little bit.
All right,
little
sorry
bit.
About that.
Anyway,
win to Monday.
Most important news of the week was the finale of Great British Bake Off. But there's other stuff too, I guess. So we'll talk about that. Lots of stuff, you know, tune in, whatever. We're gonna start off though with a little impeachment update.
Let's do it.
Lots going on over the weekend with impeachment. I don't want to go super in depth in every little bit, but there are important updates that I think that you need to be aware of. So this is gonna be our little mashup, okay? We're gonna catch up to date with the messaging going on around it. What we can expect for this weekend, for this week. One important thing that's not going to happen is John Eisenberg's testimony. This is a White House lawyer who said that despite being subpoenaed to appear, he will not show up for testimony in the House impeachment inquiry on Monday on instructions from Donald Trump. So why is that important? Well, John Eisenberg, in addition to being a White House lawyer, he is the specific White House lawyer who apparently initially made the decision for the Trump-Zelensky phone call to be routed from the normal place that they're stored to the code word isolated super secure server. Like, he's the guy that made that decision. So it seems important to talk to him and find out why do you think that this needed to be defended like so securely. But it's not gonna happen. White House counsel Pat Cipollone wrote in a letter to William Burke, Eisenberg's attorney, on Sunday that the Justice Department had advised him that Eisenberg, as a senior advisor to Trump, is quote, absolutely immune from compelled congressional testimony with respect to matters related to his service as a senior advisor to the president. It goes on to say, even if Mr. Eisenberg had been afforded a reasonable amount of time to prepare, the president has instructed Mr. Eisenberg not to appear at the deposition. So look, he's the White House lawyer. He's not a senior advisor to the president. And even if he were, this is an impeachment inquiry. He still needs to come forward, not having that happen. And in fact, Donald Trump, they're making sure that you know that this is Donald Trump's decision. That is obstruction of justice, which, as we know from the 90s, Lindsey Graham made very clear that is itself an impeachable offense.
Yeah, this is Trump's thing though. At this point, it's what
don't play ball.
Yeah, don't play. Just pretend it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Say it doesn't exist. It's not real. And you are going to try in every way to make sure that anybody who could say anything bad about you won't testify.
Yeah.
Won't go. Won't speak.
Well,
won't say anything.
He's seen what the ones who have testified have largely said, and I can understand why he would want less of that. Now. The procedure is even more formalized. It's on the Democrats. This lawyer, you need to know what he was thinking, why he made the decision. They're not going to come forward willingly, so it's on you to decide what are you gonna do about it.
I love that on one hand, like Trump is like, well, if something bad happened, a lot of people knew about it, why weren't there 10 whistleblowers? Well, there may have been one whistleblower, but every day we find out about how one of those 10 mm-hmm. people did something that wasn't quite whistleblowing, but showed us that they weren't cool with what happened, or they were cool with it and realized that no one else would be.
Yeah.
Well, and
it by the
needed
way,
to be covered up, or it need, you know.
The term whistleblower, that's a thing that we throw around, but it doesn't mean one thing.
Right.
It means, okay, the team I'm working for is doing something wrong, I need to let someone know. Lots of people have done that. Vindman did that. Other people have done that. Like, we've had multiple people testify. They're not the whistleblower, but they did raise concerns about what they saw and what they heard.
And listen, not everybody is willing to put their career in jeopardy for the sake of the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we all think that we would hope that, you know, we have people working for the White House who all would, but that we just can't be there at this point.
So really fast, I want to run through a couple of other little updates. So what is Donald Trump thinking about this? He tweeted, "What I said on the phone call with the Ukrainian president is perfectly stated." He himself put "perfectly" in quotation marks, which is usually what you do to cast suspicion on the word, but whatever. "There's no reason to call witnesses to analyze my words and meanings. This is just another blah, blah, blah." So there shouldn't be any witnesses. He's not interested in any. I might have figured out why he doesn't want more witnesses. He apparently complains daily that we're getting effing killed. A Republican close to Trump says he does make that comment literally every day. And what's interesting is he just got done, you just saw, he got done saying no more witnesses testifying, which is interesting. Bear that in mind as you read this. "The whistleblower gave false information and dealt with corrupt politician Schiff. He must be brought forward to testify. Written answers not acceptable. Where is the second whistleblower? He disappeared after I released the transcript. Does he even exist? Where is the informant? Gone." He's confusing a lot of stuff there.
The president of the United States sends us messages like that.
Yeah, so there shouldn't be any witnesses, slash this whistleblower definitely better be a witness, because you can't just give written answers. That's insane. That is how you deceive people, by not showing up, not being asked follow-up questions. You just do the written answers, which is an interesting stance coming from Donald Trump, because you might recall when Robert Mueller was doing his investigation, Donald Trump refused to testify in person and instead only submitted written answers. And in fact, at the time, Mueller described those answers as inadequate and incomplete.
Right, so he's just-
But that was good enough for him.
Right. What is so fascinating to me, like as this goes forward, I just like wonder how many people working around Donald Trump, or when he says, you know, we're getting killed, are like, wait, who is we?
Oh yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Actually, I've reached my limit, but.
I don't want to end up on Dancing with the Stars. One more thing, and this is, so that was sort of looking back at the witnesses we've had and his continuing messaging around the whistleblower, who again, who cares who the whistleblower is? We've got so many of them at this point. But moving forward, he said, "If shifty Adam Schiff, who is a corrupt politician who fraudulently made up what I said on the call, is allowed to release transcripts of the Never Trumpers and others that are and were interviewed, he will change the words that were said to suit the Dems' purposes. Republicans should give their own transcripts of the interviews to contrast with Schiff's manipulated propaganda. House Republicans must have nothing to do with Shifty's rendition of those interviews. He is a proven liar, leaker, and freak who is really the one who should be impeached." I don't even know what any of that means.
Right.
But what he's saying there is, if the official transcript of these things, which is not taken down in real time on Adam Schiff's BlackBerry, he's saying, don't trust your lying eyes when the transcripts come out. I will just say that they're made up because Adam Schiff was in the room. Well, even though he has no control over that and didn't produce them.
There's also plenty of GOP representation in all aspects of this process. So he could just go to one of his boys and be like, hey.
Yeah.
Mike Pence could ask his brother.
Yeah.
Hey, is this right?
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean?
This,
I don't know.
All this is designed to do is, hey, you guys who like me, some stuff's gonna be coming out. It's gonna sound really bad, but don't listen to it. Adam Schiff made it up somehow. Because he made a joke about something on the call once. He's still on that thing of he made up what was on the call. It was like a throwaway line, a joke that he made. Whatever. Anyway, so that's the communications going on around this week. We'll see. I mean, like 2 weeks ago we had Vindman, last week with some interesting stuff too. God knows what'll happen now. It would have been great to find out what the lawyer said, but it turns out the Dems are gonna have to push harder if they wanna get that. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, Sharon Kahn of Media Matters is gonna join us to break down Fox News' messaging around reproductive rights and abortion after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
New study shows that from 2018 on into 2019, if you were watching the news and you heard a substantive conversation around abortion and reproductive rights, you were almost sure to be watching Fox News, unfortunately. And joining us now to talk about this study and the implications of it, Sharon Kahn, Director of Abortion Rights and Reproductive Health Program at Media Matters. Welcome to the show. So not a very positive topic, unfortunately, because as we're gonna get into, Fox News is not necessarily all that interested in communicating in an honest way about this issue. But tell us a little bit about the analysis that was done by Media Matters on this.
Yeah, so the report that we released looked at approximately a year worth of cable news coverage related to abortion. And like you mentioned, Fox News, the real top line is that Fox News is incredibly dominant on this conversation. I think the other big story that we noticed through pulling this data was that although Fox is incredibly dominant and sets the terms of the conversation, the other side of that story is that CNN and MSNBC either aren't engaging in the conversation and are letting Fox dominate and set the terms, or they're repeating right-wing media lies when they do talk about it, which has its own dangerous effects.
Yeah, I mean, you very well show how Fox comes up with these narratives and then they're not countered by anyone else. And in fact, they're just amplified. I wanna read one graphic from your article. Across Fox, CNN, and MSNBC collectively, 89% of statements made about so-called abortion extremism were inaccurate. On Fox, 90% were inaccurate, as were 100% of the statements on CNN and 58% of the statements on MSNBC. And so, if you're just a regular person and you're absorbing this media over the course of a year, it seems likely that you will come away with some very inaccurate ideas about this topic.
Yeah, that figure specifically. So throughout the course of the study, we coded for four general sort of topics of information. So an example of one might be, you know, what are hosts or guests saying about Planned Parenthood? The figure that you cited is the abortion extremism code, which is sort of a catch-all of lots of different things, but essentially any extreme categorization you hear. The big one this year was the Fox News lie that then became a consistent talking point across networks, which is that, you know, Democrats support infanticide, which we know is inaccurate. But, you know, I think as the figure said, there were 11 instances on CNN after Fox set that sort of term that they repeated the misinformation or somebody didn't correct it when it came up.
Yeah, and it lingers and it's still around. I don't remember exactly which rally it was, but in the past week, Donald Trump said that some Democratic governor executed a baby as if it was some sort of like formal thing that his administration did. And so it starts off, you know, Fox News with misinformation, but eventually Donald Trump is echoing it as well.
Exactly right.
And you write about how this has become a big part of messaging around the election as part of the strategy. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that, like you just said, it's something that we know there's a pipeline of information directly from Fox News to the White House. And we saw that exact talking point, which is both inaccurate and sensationalized, show up not just at rallies, but it was in the State of the Union this year as well. Mm-hmm. Where we're seeing this play out more broadly is that as part of the consistent talking points we hear on Fox News and throughout conservative media, that Democrats are, you know, too extreme to be electable. And we've really seen this particular piece of abortion misinformation become a real hallmark of making that claim across a variety of issues.
Hey, Sharon, so obviously Fox is gonna Fox and be incredibly harmful, but what else needs to happen? What needs to happen to help push back against this? What can be done?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. There are sort of two things that we outline in the report. The first of which is that we can't be letting right-wing media and Fox News dominate the conversation and set the terms of the debate. Mm-hmm. If the first time, for example, in January, that we're getting a cable news counterpoint to the Fox News infanticide argument is like February 2nd or 3rd, that's a problem because it means that the misinformation has already become calcified. So more consistent communication by other networks and just engaged people trying to make sure accurate information is out there. And then the second thing is just be more critical consumers of information. People shouldn't be parroting things that they hear Trump say that he gets from Fox News at a rally without fact-checking it themselves.
You know, I'm curious, as one of the headline findings of the study was that like more than 90% of the talk overall on these networks about a number of different common abortion-related topics, all of it occurred on Fox. And so I'm curious, this gets, I guess, into speculation, but why is CNN and MSNBC, when they're not actively helping to spread these right-wing talking points, why aren't they talking about this issue? Like, it occurs to me that there's been a lot of abortion-related pieces of legislation that have been passed in the past year. It seems like that would be an opportunity for them to at least engage on the topic in some sense.
Right. I think it's complicated, but I think two of the main factors we've seen across a lot of the research we do here at Media Matters is, one is that Fox News is priming an audience and the repetition of very sensationalized misinformation about like infanticide, for example, is something that really plays to a base and that because it's repeated so much, they have an incentive to return to it and to find ways to tie other stories to it. So I think part of it is self-selection. The other part of it has to do a lot with how these stories are framed more broadly. I think when conversations, and this is true across networks, focus mostly on the optics, like who's winning, who's losing, and not on, you know, treating abortion as a healthcare issue or as a question of rights or access, I think it's a lot harder for other sort of narratives to emerge because we're so focused on who's winning and losing.
I think you're definitely onto something, and we can find that across a lot of different topics when it comes to these mainstream media outlets. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us and for doing that work with Media Matters. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, Kellyanne Conway hit the Sunday talk shows in defense of the president on impeachment. We are going to see how she did. Did we learn anything about the substance of these allegations after this? This weekend, Kellyanne Conway was all over the airwaves answering some tough questions about Donald Trump and what he said about the impeachment inquiry, how it's developing so far. In past attempts, we've had Mick Mulvaney try to defend the president, did not work out so well. Rudy Giuliani, I think you know where that's going. So let's see, Kellyanne, she's an experienced communicator. How did she do? Well, she was on with Chris Wallace, Republican, but one who doesn't necessarily feel like his job is to defend the president himself. Here he is asking her about the attacks against the closed door nature of the impeachment inquiry prior to this last week.
So why is it okay for Republicans when they're in charge to conduct hearings, depositions, interviews behind closed doors, but it's unacceptable for Democrats?
Respectfully, Chris, this is about impeaching a president of the United States, which is an
extreme. Well, Benghazi was about four Americans who died.
Because of the negligence of the woman who got defeated for being president.
Wouldn't you say that's pretty important, too?
And an ambassador.
Wouldn't you say that's pretty important?
And the NSA lied about a videotape being the reason.
Wouldn't you say Benghazi was pretty important?
I would say Benghazi was extremely important, and I will always be very sad.
But it was conducted behind closed doors, is my point. So why is it okay for Republicans to do
Chris,
it,
the President
but not
States
Democrats.
Has no due process right. He's had no due process rights afforded to him in this whole process.
He had a very simple question. You had the Benghazi hearings. There was one other hearing that he mentioned too under Barack Obama that the Republicans had, and they did closed door testimony. Mm-hmm. Trey Gowdy even played a bit of video of Trey Gowdy saying, witnesses are different when the cameras are rolling and when they're not. And it's much more productive when the cameras aren't rolling. And she did not engage with that hypocrisy one bit.
I'm so tired of Benghazi.
Yeah, me too.
What I would
but
really
he was,
like,
he was trying to use it for something productive,
which was great,
I guess.
But she jumped on it. Mm-hmm. She was like, and I was
like, oh, I know those talking points.
Right, exactly. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened in American history. I would really like every GOPer that comes on and says, because they just say Benghazi, that's it. Mm-hmm. I would like to give them all, before you can use it, 20 seconds, tell me exactly what that means.
Yeah.
Tell me what you're talking about. Tell me what you're referring to. Explain it.
They haven't had to explain it in a very long time.
Right.
You're just supposed to say it's a tragedy that four people died, and obviously it's singularly Hillary Clinton's fault for some reason.
I guess it's what they're supposed to say, yeah.
But anyway, look, I would honestly rate that clip was unproductive if you actually want to find out why it's okay for one party to conduct X and not the other party. But
it's unproductive to have her on your show if you would like any real
that too.
Answer. But
he did, I guess, his job. He pointed out the hypocrisy, but she is talented enough to simply slide into a different topic. But let's see if she'll continue to be able to do that. So next, what actually happened in regards to the aid, they get into it. We're gonna have a couple of clips. Here's the first.
Over the last 2 weeks, Fiona Hill and William Taylor and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, all of them top foreign policy officials for this president, have all testified about repeated instances where they saw that support for Ukraine was dependent on Ukraine investigating the Bidens. Isn't that the definition of a quid pro quo?
The fact is that Ukraine has that aid. They're using that aid as we sit here. Under President Obama, they got pillows and blankets. We've given them aid. No, that's important.
But no,
they have
no,
aid,
but
and they have more aid,
point,
and they're using it.
Which is
that
the way the aid was withheld until
the Ukrainian president says he has no idea the aid was withheld, and he, quote, felt no pressure. Why doesn't it matter what the two presidents who were involved in that phone call and in the entire transaction, and indeed in the bilateral relations between our two nations?
Okay, so the last point, why doesn't it matter what the two presidents say? Well, one, maybe it would matter with the Ukrainian president. But if we're saying that there is a corrupt exchange going on, why doesn't it matter what one of the two people in the corrupt exchange said? Well, if we believe that what they're doing is illegal, then I'm not inclined to care about their interpretation of it.
And also, abuse of power involves power.
Mm-hmm.
One in this situation had immense power over the other.
Yeah, exactly.
So once the other finally is able to get what was deserved for the betterment of their country, they're not gonna.
Yeah, and not just like, in this instance, likely in the future.
Yeah, like you asked me to investigate your political rival or you wouldn't give us humanitarian aid.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's an interesting thing there. What she said about the aid they got under Trump versus the pillows and blankets they got under Obama. The goal of that is to tell you that the Trump administration is serious about defending Ukraine and helping them to defend themselves, mm-hmm. whereas Obama was not. The important follow-up question, defend against who? Obviously, Russian aggression against them. And the thing is, she can go on those TV shows and say that they're serious about it. Donald Trump was quoted over this weekend as saying, well, you know, Ukraine was always owned by Russia anyway. Which if I were the Ukrainian government, I would be a little bit worried about him thinking that the natural state of things is for Russia to control Ukraine.
Right.
But they didn't just get blankets and pillows. That's the important thing. So look, he asked, isn't that the definition of a quid pro quo? And it definitely is. And he also got into the fact that this isn't just one phone call that demonstrates that a quid pro quo arrangement was being designed. Her response to that is, but they got the aid. But there's an issue with that as well, which she gets into in this clip.
One of the things that you and other White House officials say, well, the aid was given anyway.
That's important. They're using it right now as we speak.
Okay, but let's talk about the timeline for giving the aid. Let me put this up. The aid was held up all summer, and it was finally released on September 11th. Month and a half ago. Here's the timing. 2 days before the Inspector General informed the House Intelligence Committee about the whistleblower complaint. Kellyanne, the president didn't release the aid until the story was out.
You're trying to make that causation where it may be.
I find it an awfully interesting coincidence.
Well, they've got their aid, and that's what's important. And why
no. But how the aid came out, it was held up all summer till the 11th of September, and the only reason it came out was because.
No, don't say that. Don't go there.
It had already.
You have no idea that's why it was held up.
So you think it's a coincidence that the whistleblower complaint comes on the 9th and the aid is released on the 11th? You're suggesting that's a coincidence?
Well, I'm suggesting that you don't know what you were just about to say to be true.
Maybe it's just a coincidence. Yes, we don't know for sure, but man, it seems suspicious that it was held up for literally months while he was having these phone calls, while he was dispatching both actual diplomats under the State Department and his sort of shadow diplomacy team headed by Rudy Giuliani, all of them to get him to make him being President Zelensky to make a public assurance that he's going to do these investigations. They'd already set up what form it was going to come in. Remember the CNN interview where he was just going to spontaneously bring up that they were investigating Joe Biden. All during that time, the aid is held. Then months later, the story comes out and within 48 hours, they've given the aid that they were legally required to give. Yes, we can't prove yet with what we know that those two things are connected, but reasonable people can look at that and understand what's going on.
Yeah, I don't even understand the game. They just completely disagreed and we're always going to disagree. And that's a fascinating game of like, sure, let's have her on.
I don't know what Chris Wallace was thinking, but I assume he thinks that someone watching that will come out of it thinking they didn't really have a defense to that point that he pointed out the
so
timeline.
So the whole point is essentially just to like have her lie, but prove.
Not lie, but like sort of flounder around trying to come up with something. So if he just did a segment where he just laid out the timeline, that's one thing. But if he brings on.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
No, that's a good point.
I can't say that that was successful, but that's probably what he was hoping.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so we're gonna take a short break. We come back. Bill Maher last Friday had a couple of interesting guests on. We'll get into it after this. Bill Maher has taken a number of increasingly questionable stances on his show, and this week he took another one, having a guest on, Dr. Jay Gordon, who's a part of the anti-vax movement. In the past, he's called measles a benign childhood illness. And so he had him on, and he defended him, saying, you know, to call you this crazy person, really, what you're just saying is slower vaccinations, maybe less numbers, and also take into account individuals. People are different. Family history, stuff like that. I don't think this is crazy. The autism issue, they certainly have studied it a million times, and yet there's all these parents who say, I had a normal child, got the vaccine. This story keeps coming up. It seems to be more realistic to me if we're just going to be realistic about it. Like, it probably happens so rarely, but you can't say it happens one in a million times because then somebody could think, well, I could be this millionth one. So you scare people, so you can't say what might be the more realistic opinion. And he's not really explicit there, but what he appears to think is the more realistic opinion is to continue to believe, despite the lack of any scientific evidence for a link between vaccines and autism, against all of the positive benefits of vaccinations, that he is going to use his platform with millions of viewers and his social media reach and all that to continue to call into question the idea that you should vaccinate your children. And he can sort of try to nuance it a little bit. It's about slower and taking into account individuals. But the people who are against vaccinations are not gonna be like, you know what, good point, I'm gonna go a little bit slower. They just don't vaccinate their children, and that can be deadly for their children and for other children as well. So look, I bring you on to talk about this, Brooke, because you're a big fan
like
of Bill
to
Maher.
Torture me.
No, because I know that you love Bill Maher.
Okay.
And so he has done a lot of really questionable stuff, as I said
no,
in the
awful
intro.
Awful stuff.
Awful stuff, yes.
Questionable is
I was being
unfair.
Jokey.
Okay.
But having on for a long interview too, it was a big chunk of the show, this anti-vax doctor, who he said, the doctor said a couple of things to be like, you know, I admit there's no scientific evidence for what I'm saying here, which that's not a thing you should put in as a side note. That
right.
should be a core concern for your identity, which is an anti-vaxxer. But that's what he used his show for. That's what HBO is promoting.
Listen, Bill Maher sat up there and called himself a house N-word. Like, so
except
do we
he didn't
feel,
say
this,
that specifically.
Now,
he said the full
this
thing.
Is this finally too far?
No, not too
like,
far.
My thing
but
is just kind of like, this is what you expect from Bill Maher. Eventually, a person who hits this group of people is gonna hit this group, and then this group, and then this group, and then this group. But everyone's gonna keep supporting him and gonna keep going on his show. HBO, like these, like big corporations, big companies, big networks, they don't do anything because the executives feel personally like, oh, you know what? That's too far.
Mm-hmm.
No, they react to the public. Megyn Kelly would still have a job if people on Twitter hadn't said, okay, it's too far.
Mm-hmm.
Because what she said on Fox News essentially every single day matched what she said that day.
Yeah, and with Bill Maher, he can say whatever he wants in his show, I don't really care. But I think that people should understand what sort of liberal he is. That it's a particular sort. And like him trying to like, for whatever reason, and I'll get into the reasons, him trying to like reach out and hug this like this extremist weird Santa Monica parent sort of thing where they don't think they should vaccinate their kids, that's weird boomer liberalism. That's
it's
all it is.
It's not liberalism at all. Like Bill Maher's behavior has nothing to do with
his politics. The people who are anti-vax, some of them are right wing, but it's more common for people who are otherwise liberal, but they go crazy on this issue.
I think Bill Maher's, like things that come out of his mouth, they don't have anything to do with his politics. He's just not that nice of a person.
Yeah. Well,
and
look, he has an explanation
about that.
He has an explanation for why he feels like he needs to talk about this here. So he says it's courageous to speak at all about the topic of vaccines. He says of the idea that there's one true opinion, we don't play that game here. He called physicians the people in the white coats. So this idea is that, and I was talking about this before the show, back in the 90s, he had politically incorrect or whatever. The idea was that he was going to say the stuff that other people thought but didn't say. Here's the thing, people are saying this. They're crazy people online. They say that vaccines cause autism or other things. It's not courageous or bold to say that. It's courageous or bold to live your life with no concern for what science says, I guess.
Not only are people saying that, they're acting on it. And we're seeing breakouts of massive diseases that we haven't seen in decades.
Yeah.
Like, and he's cool with that because it's courageous.
It's not courageous. Like the idea that there are certain types of people, and especially comedians, that as they age, they hit this point where they just think that anything they're criticized on is the same way that they were criticized when they were 20 for like talking about drugs or something. That now anyone who criticizes them makes them more right. But no, sometimes it's that society has passed you by and they're trying to correct you to try to catch you up to society, but you're pushing against them and moving more. Like his second guest was Dennis Prager, who we had Parker Beloy on to talk about Prager U, they make misinformation videos on YouTube, right wing misinformation, weird misogynistic
podcast.
Exactly. Dennis Prager, that same week he was on Bill Maher, said, "Good grammar is white grammar, so you cannot insist that students speak properly or write properly because you'll be called a racist." That's who Bill Maher had on one of his panels. Like,
what this is sometimes really rich people who have almost every privilege out there. You just start scraping for more, and you start to think that you want. This is not him not understanding like the criticism. He's very smart. He's very intelligent. He wants to be able to do and say things that people are saying he can't.
Yeah,
he shouldn't.
It's a knee-jerk reaction.
Wants to be able to do everything. He likes the power and the freedom that he has to do and say whatever he wants.
Yeah, and some things aren't worth doing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's not worth doing a 15-minute interview with an anti-vaxxer. It's not worth taking one of your, you have so few spots on those panels, so few that you can never manage to get a progressive on there, and yet you have room for Dennis Prager. Or that you feel like you need to bring on Milo, like at the height of his awfulness, to have a dialogue with you.
I know,
that was a stupid approach. No, when he was pushed into the shadows, now he doesn't matter anymore. And that was how you beat this thing, not using your reach to millions of people to try to normalize a white supremacist.
Right, and when people behave like this, you've got to pull in Elizabeth Warren and let them be exactly who they are. And people who don't agree with that and who aren't of that need to stop going on Bill Maher and they need to stop going on Joe Rogan. Like, it is just time to just take a stand. And even though it's really cool and the audience is still there and it's cool to be on HBO and it's an iconic show and has a lot of history, and you know, I'll push back against what he says. You just cannot be cool with that platform. People just
gotta stop. That is 100% right. And someday I'm gonna say it to him on his show. I'm gonna deliver it to him on his show.
Bill Maher segment, we end with him making sure that later on in life, you know, he wasn't a hypocrite.
Okay? No,
John has
said
he's
going
to go on the show.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. Now he's never gonna have you on anyway. He doesn't have progressives.
If he knows what's good for him.
He needs room for Ben Shapiro and Tommy Lauren to fit on the panel, okay? Okay, so really fast, just a couple of minutes. Let's have a little bit of fun.
Okay.
Okay, we're gonna tee it over to something different.
Oh gosh.
I don't know. A couple of weeks ago, Edward Snowden was on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I missed one section of it. I guess it was news, but I didn't see it. So we got to talk about the aliens. So obviously, Edward Snowden had a lot of access to a number of different secure servers in the government. He had access to all that stuff. And so a lot of people believe that the government has been hiding evidence of aliens. Some people believe that. Some people, like me, hope that they've been hiding evidence of aliens and that somebody who had all this access would have access to it, but maybe not. He said, "I know, Joe, I know you want there to be aliens. I know Neil deGrasse Tyson badly wants there to be aliens, and there probably are, right? But the idea that we're hiding them, if we are hiding them, I had ridiculous access to the networks of the NSA, the CIA, the military, all these groups. I couldn't find anything." He admitted that it was entirely possible that knowledge of alien contact was hidden really damn well from people with direct access. He says, "Everybody wants to believe in conspiracy theories because it helps life make sense. It helps us believe that somebody is in control, that somebody is calling the shots," which is a bold thing to say on Joe Rogan's podcast, considering the audience. But he admitted, like, he was open to finding it. He looked to find it, but he didn't find it.
Well, I think what's so fascinating about this overall is it puts things about Edward Snowden into even more perspective.
What do you mean?
Initially, the focus of was what the information that he was releasing. That was the focus. But now I'm
kind of— You mean back years ago?
Yeah. Okay. And so now, though, I'm kind of stepping back and realizing, No way, he was just wilding out. He was looking through everything, looking for anything and everything. And that hadn't really dawned on me. The focus was about like, this is what he found. This is what he's releasing. And you want to, you know, like hone in on that. But like, I just picture every day what he was doing. And that like had never dawned on
me. Are the Olsen twins secretly one person?
Everything, all day, every day. He was just snooping through our government's most like private information, looking for anything.
Was Mulder onto something?
Like, how long did he spend looking for proof of alien life?
Probably weeks. But that's so wild. I would do that, wouldn't you? Like if you had access to that?
I'm not going to.
That's what I would be searching for.
Nope, I'd do my job and I would leave. I'm sorry.
It's worth it.
What?
It's worth it to find out if there are Vulcans. But anyway, he said one other thing. He said, for the record, as far as I could tell, aliens have never contacted Earth, or at least they haven't contacted US intelligence. Yes, man really did land on the moon. Climate change is real. Chemtrails are not a thing. I need this. Not because I question those things, but because a lot of people still question those things. And hopefully Edward Snowden, who has a lot of respect out there, if he says it, hopefully, especially on a show as big as Joe Rogan's podcast, hopefully some people listening will be like, oh, so chemtrails aren't a thing. Okay, good. Edward Snowden clarified things for us. Thank you, Edward. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, a little bit of fun to close out the show. I know what you're thinking, that is a crowd that hates octagons, but no, they're actually booing the president because that is a thing now. But the reason this is interesting is it was one thing at a baseball game a week ago, but UFC, I mean, we're not yet at like WWE booing the president, but UFC, hypothetically, that's Trump country, right? Wouldn't you think?
I watched one UFC match and it was like, like it was too much. So I don't really know.
I like the idea of it, but
I
don't watch it. I have no idea who is actually fighting there.
But on Twitter, they say these are his people.
Yeah, they do say that. I mean, the idea is it's a more conservative audience or whatever than baseball. I think of baseball as being a pretty conservative audience too. Yeah. But yeah, even at the UFC, like, and he took time out. He went to New York to watch it. There is, though, like with last week, there is controversy about exactly what you just heard there. So we listen to that, and I hear a mix of boos and cheers. It sounds like a mix. I can't say exactly what distribution, but not everyone thinks that, including unbiased sources like Eric Trump, who said at UFC 244 chanting Donald Trump, USA, USA.
It sounded like maybe you. I definitely didn't, that couldn't be mistaken with Donald Trump, well, USA, USA, what?
Well, and it would be difficult for you to figure it out because that, go back to that tweet, that, like, you may believe that, because we're not playing it, you may believe that it's a video. It's not a video, it's just an image, which makes it really tough to say whether what you're saying is honest or not when you only put a picture there. But then the other person desperately looking for father's approval is Donald Trump Jr. said, for all the haters that keep pretending it was only cheers by us in the first video and boos elsewhere, here's another one from higher up. Nice try, fake news. Faker's gonna fake. But you're only driving on the point that you guys are biased beyond repair. And here's the thing, so I listened to his video, and yeah, there's some cheers in it, but there's also some boos. Why do we have to pretend that it's only one thing, either way? Like, some people like your daddy, and some people hate your daddy. You're just gonna have to accept that at some point.
Yeah,
But they're obviously biased. They're the only people who potentially want Donald Trump more to see them out defending him than the Trump brothers is Fox and Friends, who had this to say about the issue.
You know, the media can say what they want about it, but this is a crowd that loves this is not a PC crowd right here. This is a crowd that appreciates the brawler style of a brawler president who is there in New York City, the belly of the beast, to watch this fight.
And there are some media outlets actually saying that they mostly heard boos. This has become so juvenile. If you actually listen to the video and the audio, there clearly were a ton of cheers. And the bottom line, who cares at the end of the day? The president was trying to have a fun night.
So here's the thing.
How the president talks about impeachment.
Yeah, totally.
So like a lot of people are saying this and that, and you know what, so maybe, but who cares? Because what only matters is that like this, like.
Yeah, you know what I love to end a segment by saying who cares about it after I've just done a segment on my TV show about it. So Ed Henry, clearly you guys care about it at least as much as I care about
it. Right.
Not, not that important, but we can at least say that we are interested in whether the public out there supports the president or doesn't. And to the extent that we can learn anything from booing or cheering, yeah, we're a little bit interested in it. And the thing is, this is not PC country. Okay, but here's the thing, you are literally triggered over the idea that some people booed the president, so much so that you did a segment about it. That's weird. I really hate this fetishizing of this incredibly biased concept of who is PC and who is not. Here is the truth. Everybody likes hearing some things and they don't like hearing other things. Mm-hmm. And we've come up with a term for people on the left who don't like hearing things. There's no convenient term for people on the right who don't like hearing things. But if you think that that makes them not politically correct, go up to them and say happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas and see how they feel about that. Say anything negative about religion and see how triggered they get about that. Just because we don't have a term for it, and just because people like, I'm sorry to bring him up again, but just because people like Bill Maher helped to advance this right bias term that only people on the left don't like hearing certain things, doesn't make it true. Every person in that UFC audience has something you could say to them that'd make them lose their minds. Maybe for some of them, the conservatives in the audience, if you were to step on a flag, they'd lose their minds despite the fact that it's just fabric, okay? Everybody has some things they don't like seeing or hearing.
Right. I completely agree with you. I think this is ridiculous. I also hate when people misuse it. You were kind of alluding to this, like the phrase politically correct, mm-hmm. like as if it's a curse word. Mm-hmm. Like if you break it down, it's like, oh, hey, treat marginalized communities, treat people who are different than you in many different aspects with respect.
Yeah. And the dishonest thing is they act as if the term politically correct just came up. And then everyone looked around to see who it applies to. And it just happens to apply to right. the left, but that's not true. It came up as a way to respond to the fact that leftists were finally speaking up about things they didn't like. Like if you believe that only the left is politically correct, I want you to show a Black Lives Matter sign to a hardcore right winger and see how they respond to that. They have a problem with it. They don't consider it to be correct politically to say that. Yeah. They have their own term, all lives matter. Why did they come out with that? Why did they feel the need to come up with a different slogan? Because they were so bothered by the one that some people dared to organize around.
Well, because let's be honest, it's they're a little racist and they're bothered by the idea of people protecting like black lives or
adding
value to it.
And what is correct politically to them is white supremacy and not questioning
absolutely.
It. Yeah.
It's not about like being even. It's like, no, we like things. Yeah, we know things are a little racist. We like that.
And we like it. And yeah. It makes me uncomfortable when you point out how biased the way things are is.
Yeah, thank goodness Pete Buttigieg apologized for when he was an All Lives Matter kind of guy. All right.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm starting to think there might be issues with him. Did you know that the primary is down to him and Elizabeth Warren, according to him? Weird how that works out.
We don't have time today.
Oh yeah, anyway. Okay, so we actually have like an extra minute, which we never have. So I want to read some of your iTunes reviews because you guys may not know. If you watch this on our live platforms or if you do the podcast, you do YouTube, you may not know, this is a podcast too. And it turns out the way iTunes does podcasts, it's impossible to discover them. So the best way to help with that is to do a 5-star review and post a little comment about it. So Citizen said, I listen every day. I appreciate your unique blend of news, fact-checking, respectable guests, and humor. I've never heard of them referenced as respectable guests, but I think they are.
Okay, I'll take it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Multigrain Master says, deserves all the stars. I try to watch the live show every day to get John's take on the major headlines and see how his criticisms compare to my own. He and his guests and contributors truly represent an informed and compassionate progressive perspective. He's also a human and has refreshing, genuine human reactions to the messed up world he reports on. Aww. I appreciate all the work that goes into the show. Keep at it.
That's everybody.
That was
back
some nice stuff they said about you.
See, that was about Brett, that part. But then it was about Sophie and Angel and Bart and Ja'Cory and Skip and Edwin and Craig and
Brandon. Well, not Bart, but everyone other than Bart, mostly.
There. And yeah. Norma.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also,
so
I have a
thank
podcast.
You so much.
It's called Controlling Our Narrative. It's on Apple. I too would like 5 stars and a
there
listener
you go.
Too.
Yeah, I will review it if and when I am ever asked about it, which is never gonna happen.
Friends.
Anyway, so thank you so much for watching and doing the review. By the way, if you don't already know, we've been doing on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thedamagereport, we've been doing live videos before the live show each day. So around 9:15 or so Pacific time, 12:15 Eastern time, usually do a live video about some sort of breaking news that we just can't fit in the show. So be sure to tune into that. Thank you, as always, Brooke.
You're welcome. Great to have you on.
Lots of fun. Thank you. So much planned for this week. Great guests as well. Very respectable guests this time around. So tune in throughout the week. You'll see that. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.